Mr. Larry Gaines, Reel 2. You were saying about how the spider had been splattered on your back.
Yes, well, we got into the medical hut, and a bit of luck, the MO was there, medical officer. And he looked, and first thing he done was to rip my shirt off off my back with this spider stuck to it. And whilst the orderly was attending to that, to the spider, he was out with a needle. And I think he jabbed me about a dozen times all around the area, you know, where the spider... Because as the book hit it, that was the only thing I think we worry about. When he contacted the spider, it might grip. But as Taffy came from behind, he didn't know what hit him, you know. He didn't get a chance to grip, he just spread. But I think I was lucky that day. And the medical officer, he put this thing in a jar of spirits. And when you looked at it in the jar, it just looked like, well, a half crown, the old half crowns, you know, small to what it was on my shoulder. I mean, it was bigger than my hand. And I got a small hand, but I've never seen anything so close, not at close quarters. And I think really that is my only... When you asked me about had I been treated for any illness or anything, that was the only thing.
You said you had a boil once.
Oh, yes. Well, that's... to most people, if you had a boil, you didn't go sick, you know. It's. I think out there, there's some used to suffer badly with boils. But I was lucky, I just had that one.
Where was it?
On the knee, which... this chap took off. What happened? Stabberon took it out when I was on guard. And it was just big and swollen up. And I've still got a small hole in the top of my knee where he took it out. And I showed it to him on a reunion once. He wouldn't believe it. And I said, well, you done that when you took it out in the guard room.
How did he come to take it out?
With his thumb, you know. He just said, oh, he said, what are you worrying about? He said, you don't have to walk around with them things. Hang on. And he put two thumbs down and like that, literally took it right out. And it was a marvellous feeling, you know, because boil was painful. And he'd taken it out and all that pain just faded away.
Whilst you were preparing to go out to India, did the army in England give you any information about what to expect once you got there? Did they give you any lectures or printed handouts or anything like that?
No, nothing at all, because when you left your regiment in England, you were 3 weeks on the sea, on the troop ship. And what any information, if any was required, you would get on the boat. You know, we had a lecture from a medical officer on the boat, used to give us a chat, talk about things when we were getting near India, you know, what to do, what not to do. But there wasn't much, not on the boat.
What type of things did he tell you?
Well, more or less diseases, you know, things to be careful and... But they didn't go into that much, he said, because once we got to our destination, all this would be brought out and, you know, explained to us, which he thought was best on the spot. Because if you talked about it on the boat, you more or less forget it before you got there. But there were kind of things, if you were told, I don't think I would forget. But it didn't seem to... we didn't seem to have much of that on the boat at all, not lectures on that.
What type of things, though, did they tell you, which you said that you wouldn't be likely to forget?
Well, the diseases, you know, types of diseases, mostly the emphasized BD, and to us... Well, what's he talking about, BD or something? Because we'd never had this kind of thing, we didn't know... Actually, we didn't attach any importance to it at the time. like all lectures, you get sometimes you get a bit bored and you're anxious. We were anxious to get to where we were going, and we used to sit and listen to these lectures. But when he mentioned this VD, we put two and two together. So I said to my mate, I said, well, that's one thing we won't worry us, you know, because it's the types that go out, like we found out in time. They go out and pick up these diseases. And some think nothing of it. But we had no cause to worry about that, because we had so much to occupy our mind, such as I was running a dance band. I got that up. And you were always working and thinking. You didn't have time to say, oh, what the devil can we do, you know.
But you said that some people did get VD. And
oh, yes, you
can
did.
Can you tell me about the times when you came across people who'd caught it in the army?
Yes, well, you do get it. You have chaps, they go out most likely and they might pick this up from outside, bazaars or what have you, and they would be treated for it. But you were never, to me, you're never clear of it. You read and you hear about people being cured, but we were always told in my days that VD, you could never be cured. And I've always believed that. That's why I don't believe that. If you see anybody at present day who's had VD, like these youngsters you read about in the press, well, they've got it and they never get rid of it, I think.
You said that you came across a chap in whilst you were in a lavatory once. Who you? Can you tell me that story?
Yes, well, he was a chap that was not in our particular regiment. He was attached to us for the present. He came out and he'd only been out there, what, a month, a few weeks, two or three weeks. And I don't think he realised it, but he seemed to have got it, and that he was a quiet lad, you know. He was an escort, officer's escort, his duties. Whether he picked it up during his jip walk back from where he'd been, I don't know. But it was a week after, and next thing we heard, he just shot his brains out. That was in Bengal. But we knew him personally because they were next to us, you know, in the area. And we had a lot in common. But I don't think it could have been that really was worrying him. But he was always a worrying type of a lad, you know. He was only a youngster. So young, so about 18. So he was man's age, wasn't he?
Did you have any other instances of people who attempted to commit suicide?
Well, not. I think there was one, yes. Yes, it was one. I don't think he meant to have done it, but we began past the toilets and we heard this shout, and I think he timed it quite well, knowing somebody was coming by, and then we dived in. We managed to get him down before the damage was caused.
You know, get him down from what?
On the lavatory seat, I suppose, and he jumped with his throat. But I think he knew we were coming by.
You mean he was trying to hang himself?
Yes, was he? Well, at least he was trying to give us that impression. But a lot of these chaps, they eventually went home, you know, home establishment, back home to the 2nd Battalion. But we had very little of that.
Why do you think this chap was trying to hang himself then?
No reason, I don't know. We had nothing to do with him, you know. It was not as if we knew him, not as if he was in our room, our barrack room. We did know him personally, but we can't think why. But you do get some highly strung types, you know, and I should imagine that that might play on them a bit. Mm. You know, they sit and think a lot. They don't get up, they don't occupy like we used to. I mean, you're always active. Your brain was thinking about something or doing something. Even to skylarking about in the barrack room, you know, acting the fool. You were never stationary. Like you get chaps there, you could see them meditating. They'd sit there for hours. They didn't want to do anything. We couldn't be like that. We were always, as I say, either acting the fool or going out for walks, hikes.
Can you tell me, were there any instances of horseplay that you used to get in the barracks?
Well, several.
Can you tell me some of the stories?
Some of the... especially the one with the rifle chest I told you about.
Didn't you tell me about one instance where you... they put you in a box to bury you on one occasion?
Sounds hopeful. Well, yes, well, that was a moment where, as I say, that was at Hill Station at Chakrata. And we sat there and wondering what to do, playing cards and whatnot, and we got fed up with it. So one of the lads said, oh, I don't know, come on, let's have a funeral service or something. And in the corner was this big rifle chest. And of course, Muggins, myself, they put me in this rifle chest, even to the extent of tying a pillowcase around my jaw, put the lid on. And that was when it was a bit creepy. Put a bugle on top of the box and the topi, carried me out. I could feel it, the sway of the box as they carried me out of the bungalow, and they put me on the edge of the cud side and tipped it, and away I went. Of course, as I reached the bottom of the cud, which wasn't far, there was bushes and that, the lid flew off. And of course, this was night time, you know. So of course, that was quite a big joke. But I think the one that really amused me afterwards was I was on duty, officers' mess call. Used to be two of us had to sound officers' mess. And the officers' mess was about 200 to 250 yards down this track. And we were walking down this track that night, it was moonlight. And old Bungie Hill, he was a bit of a nervous type of a chap. And I thought I would have a joke, you know. We got halfway down this track and I said, no, hang on, Bungie. I said, see that gap in the edge on your left we're coming to? I said, well, be careful. I said, that's where the panthers hang out. I was only messing about. And I had a torch with eight cells, you know, eight batteries in, like a searchlight when you switch it on. And we got near this gap. And I said, hang on. And I said, I switched the torch on. And as I switched it on, there was these two red eyes beaming out of this hole in the edge. I said, well, it shook me at the moment. I said, but I can't remember Bungie Hill, I can't remember him moving. I said, and he wasn't there. So I said, next thing I knew, I said, this thing shot out of the hole. I said, all it was just a jackal. So I had to go down and sound the officer's mess call on my own. I said, when I got back, I said, there was Bungie on the bed. I said, they were bringing him round. I said, I can't even remember him moving. I said, he literally flung himself through the door, shouting the odds, and thought I'd been had by a panther.
He told them that you'd been eaten.
Well, he quite had the impression as he thought it was a panther when we saw these red eyes, and he vanished. He didn't wait to see what change was coming at. He left me, and I suppose he thought it was coming out to attack me, like, and he got away with it. He should have known that, because I was sounding the officer's mess call.
Didn't you say that another where they used to fool about was dressing up as ghosts?
Well, that was more or less the same station. I mean, it's things you do there you would never think of doing in this country, you know.
What exactly did they do?
Well, I mean, we were all, what, 19 and 20, 21 years of age, we were. If we'd have done things in this country, what we'd done out there, acting the fool, people would have thought we were, you know, out of our mind. Kids play.
But can you tell me how they actually dressed up and...
Well, this particular instance, I mean, you're sitting in your bungalow at night, and because of the moonlight out there, is a moonlight, you can read a paper by it, particular nights, and next thing you know, you look at the window, you hear a movement, you look at the window, and there's this white something, and while you're looking at it, something seems to come from the top, and this thing's bending over, and the face looks in at the window. Of course, it all turns out to be a chap on another chap's shoulder, and they got sheets on. Looks for all the world like a 12-foot ghost, you know. And that's quite a laugh.
Didn't you tell me that you used to have races in Garry's? Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah, well, that was Bengal, Dhaka. We'd go down to this restaurant, OK restaurant, and as I say, it wasn't the case them days of going out and getting half tipsy, you know, drink. Because there was no drink, we didn't drink, we just had eggs and chips and cups of tea. And then it was time to go back to the camp. And we'd come out of this restaurant, and it just went through your mind, oh, I'll tell you what, we'll have a race back to camp. I said, these tongas are standing there. I said, there's two ponies, you know, the box type. Tonga and the old chap on top. So we climb. One of us would climb up on top of the Tonga, or Garry as we used to call it. And these poor two little ponies, sharp pointed, featured looking animals, half starved, you know. And away we go, racing back to camp. Well, that was 2 to 3 miles through this moonlit lanes and trees. And we had two of the lads, I think that night was McLennigan's. They were in my Tonga. I keep calling it Tonga, but it Bengal, it's Garry. In Salcott, it was Tonga. This Garry, the doors open at the side. And as we got near the camp, I suppose they thought, so well, sooner than pay their 8 annas for the fare, they'd have a bucksy ride. They opened the door and dived out near the camp. But as he happened to dive out, there was a tree coming up. And apparently he kissed this tree as he jumped out. And the Garry was going pretty fast. And at any rate, he wasn't about the bungalow, but we had a look outside and we see somebody looking a bit dazed. And it was about half hour afterwards, he just come round, picked himself up, and he was okay, mar for a couple of bruises. It was a laugh, though.
So he'd been unconscious for half an hour?
Well, I suppose he was conscious, but as I say, we didn't drink or anything like that them days. I mean, you didn't want to. It was a spirit. You don't get that these days, not with them. The lads, they don't seem to think everything's got to be worked out for them. But when we were out in India on our 2 bob a day, 14 shillings a week, we were quite happy because we used to make our own entertainment.
Didn't you play one joke with playing the last post once?
Yeah, well, that was another prank, but it nearly got me 7 days CB. I mean, we thought we'd have a competition, see who could last the longest sounding last post. And I was near the end, second to the last. I stood out there sounding this last post. And even myself, I got a bit worried when I got halfway through. I said, my God, I'll be out here all night. And the people on staff prayed, were moaning, so cold. And I eventually finished. And I can see the bandmaster now coming outside his door. And as I finished the last post, I heard him shout from his bungalow, "Who's that bloody warbling canary?" So I hid myself, shot back in the guard room, and next thing, they wanted to know who the bugler was on duty the night before. No, I was lucky, I got a lecture, but I thought I'd got to be put on a charge for messing about. They couldn't charge me, I was only sounding a call. And really, the last post, when it's played with music, you've heard the last post played like on television. Well, that takes some time, doesn't it?
It's meant to be slow.
But when you get a bugle on its own and nothing around it, you know, no trimmings, it's agony. Oh dear.
Can we talk about the voyage out to India on the ship? What were the conditions like on the troop ship?
I know what you want. Well, the actual... we used to do duties. You had your duties on the troop ship, you know, like guard bugler, ship's bugler that you called it. And I was going up one morning, and these two lads were coming along the deck. They'd come up from the cookhouse. They had to climb up to the top deck from that cookhouse and along the deck and down to the dining deck. And I was on the top deck when I saw these two chaps, and the old boat was rolling a bit. I said, one boy looked a bit green. I said, and they dropped this big bin, which was full of porridge. I said, the poor fellow never had a chance to get the side. I said, he let it go.
He vomited.
Because he vomited and the porridge was in the way. They brought him round, got a bit worried. So I just wisecracked, said, best thing you do is stir that up and take it down. So they went down to the mess deck, and I went down, and I saw them with this bin of porridge, and they started dishing it up and passing it along. And I told my pal, I said, you don't want to touch that, you don't want porridge, leave it alone. And he said, oh, it was his favourite. I said, not this one, isn't it? I said, don't touch it, I said, don't have it. So he said, oh, what's the matter with it? So I said, I had to tell him to stop him eating it, because three or four lads heard me telling him. I said, and the next thing you knew, I said, there was a stampede for the portholes from the mess deck. But half of them had eaten their porridge.
Had they noticed any difference?
No. As I looked at them, I nearly... And old Tommy started playing tricks on us. I better go out on top deck. So I bust off out on top deck. We've always had a laugh at that.
Were conditions very crowded on the troop ship?
No, not really. You see the quarters, Mary quarters had their deck. They were partitioned off. And then there was the top deck officers and first class department, and the lads on the ground floor kind of business, usual place. But there was plenty of room.
Were you sleeping in hammocks?
Yes. Oh, that was my first experience of hammocks. We strung these hammocks up and It's quite just the old boat rolling, you know, you didn't notice it. One or two wanted to prefer the deck. They laid on the deck. And the only thing we used to worry about, the portholes were well screwed up at night. It was at 6 o'clock or whatever. If a storm was coming, you get it through the tannoy system, you know, tighten all the portholes up tight. But if you didn't, you'd know it. Especially the lads had a hammock right by the porthole. So we had no mishaps there. It was quite... not that I can remember. There were one or two we'd heard of that, you know, waves come up and chap didn't bother with his porthole. Bowled over out of his hammock, you know. But it wasn't on their deck. That was further down the deck. But we had no mishaps. We'd just done as we were told.
How did you keep yourselves entertained on board ship?
Well, on troop ship, it was difficult, really. I mean, somehow you didn't want to. You just didn't want to do anything particular. What you had in your mind was the place you were going to. And we used to lean on the old rail and watch the sharks round the bottom of the boat, you know. And we used to talk about this. And the hours used to seem to... even to the night, we'd end up sleeping on deck if it was hot. And we'd still be talking about this place, India, we hadn't seen. And there was nothing else you wanted. We used to talk to somebody if we thought they'd been out there, but they'd been no farther than Karachi, you know, because their job was on the boat, so they didn't really know anything about India. And as I say, we eventually got to India, Karachi there, and we gets off the boat, we all marched off the boat, and we were there for about two or three hours, I think, 3 to 4 hours. And the first thing we noticed was Charwallas. Now cut Cornwaller, you know, all the,
and... what, Cornwaller?
Nail cut Cornwaller, cut your nails and, you know, corns. And it so happened that one of my mates, he had a corn on his toe, his big toe, just